mixing things up today. I'm drinking tea.
Ooh, what kind of tea?
I haven't tried it yet. It's green matcha and grapefruit. I think you brought it.
Yes,
I do. Do you like it?
I enjoy it. I think it would be better iced, but it's definitely...
Oh, yeah, it's good.
It hits you on that bitter side if you're into that sort of thing. Like the bitter grapefruit, matcha's bitter.
Mm-hmm. I feel like we should go ahead and tell the people now that this will be the last podcast for sure until after summer is over.
Yes.
Because sometimes if you know it's the last one, you might want to save it. I don't know. It's like I don't like to watch the last episode of something until the next season comes out.
Until you're like fully prepared.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So if that's you, if you have a weird thing with like lasts, just know this will be
the last one for a little while.
The last new one for a while.
Yeah.
We may do like a... You know how the big podcasts do a, hey, listen to this one again. We mm-hmm. might do some of that over the summer, but.
Yeah. But summer's my busy time. I need some time to get away from the podcast mm-hmm. and focus on that.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
And we need time to like get rejuvenated for the podcast.
Yeah. Rest, baby, rest.
Yes, yes. Okay. So with that sad news out of the way, let's jump into the fun stuff.
Woo!
This is Be Createful, a podcast about finding fullness through creativity. I'm Joe.
And I'm Madison. And today on episode 117, we're talking about the stories that we tell.
The stories we tell.
I love stories. And I don't think that would be any shock to anyone because I fill my life with them. Mm-hmm. I love Marvel superhero movies. I love joint storytelling through D&D. I love reading books. I love lore. I love me some stories. Mm-hmm. I think they're fabulous.
Do you like documentaries and that kind of stuff?
I do. I love the stories of people's lives. I love the stories that my parents will talk about other family members that have since passed. I'm mm-hmm. like, oh, this is what their lives were like. Yeah, I love all of that.
Sometimes, speaking of family members telling stories about other people, sometimes you know how you'll go down like a deep, dark spiral of... Everyone dies or whatever. And I think, what stories would I tell? And then I'm like, I don't even know. I don't even know what stories I would tell about my sister.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Like everyone in your family, like just once people are gone, because, you know, we don't get to live forever.
Mm-hmm.
And then what are my favorite stories? And then I'm like, I don't even know.
Oh, yeah. Like if you had to eulogize somebody.
Yeah.
I often think about what stories people will tell about me. Like when my family passes down stories mm-hmm. of me, what's mm-hmm. going to stick out?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, but sometimes I think about my life in context like that.
Yeah. For Christmas, my sister got my dad Storyworth, which is, I think they send him a prompt every week.
Ooh.
So then for 52 weeks, he writes a prompt and then at the end, it puts it all into a book and you can put in pictures and all kinds of stuff. And it sends them to us. Like we can read them, but I'm not caught up on reading them. Honestly, they like make me, they're pretty emotional because even like the ones that aren't sad are still, I don't know.
Like, do you have an example of a prompt that might
oh,
be
so
in
they
there?
Asked him like, what was his favorite candy or something? And then they will ask a question like that. And then through the process, it'll unlock like a whole different story. So like he talked about I don't remember even, or like what was his favorite sound, or oh my gosh, and that one like was so hit me real hard because he listed a few sounds and then the last one he talked about was hearing the word daddy.
Oh,
and I was like gutted.
Yes.
So I don't like to be in my feelings. So sometimes it's easier for me to just avoid.
Like not that. Have to read them and involve with them. I think that just goes to show that like oftentimes our favorite things have meaning that's beyond just, hey, I like the thing. It has a story attached to it, or things that we've just, you know, started to enjoy. We enjoy because they happened at this moment with this person and it takes us back to that that point. There's a story with everything.
Mm-hmm. That's part of nostalgia, isn't it?
I think so, too, which is why I am a little excited about this prompt today.
So what brought this up was last month, the email that I sent to our email list, which if you're not on, you should be. I'll put a link down in the show notes. Because
we tell some good stories on there.
Was about how the first thing I said was, I'm not a gardener. And then I launched into this whole thing about how, but, you know, I'm giving it a go. And I have gone completely jumped into the deep end with my gardening, which I think I surely have mentioned on the podcast. So then this month, I thought, I shouldn't have said that.
Why?
Like, well, because here's why. If I heard someone at Make Do start a sentence with, I'm not, fill in the blank, I'm not creative, I'm not a quilter, I'm not an artist, I'm not,
yeah,
you know,
I'm not a crafty person.
Yeah. I mean, unless you're going to be like, I'm not a dog. Well, that's true. I'm not.
Yes.
I'm not tall. Like,
sure.
There are
basic
things.
Facts.
Right. But I feel like we spend so much time telling ourselves and others what we're not instead of focusing on what we are. And so I'm always trying to get people to reframe the way that they talk about themselves in Make Do. And so I just thought, I really missed an opportunity to practice what I preach by starting my email off with, I'm not a gardener. Now, what it did do was give me a prompt for this month's email.
Yep.
But I said, so, like, you know, I kind of told that story. And, you know, if I heard me say in a Make Do class, I'm not a gardener, the conversation I would have had with myself would have gone something like, well, are you working in your yard?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Are you, like, getting your hands dirty and dirt under your fingernails and doing things that a gardener would do? Well, yeah.
Well,
then
there you are.
You are gardening. And then the noun of that is you are a gardener. So
you might be a beginning one.
Right.
A novice. But right. That's a modifier. That's
yes.
Not a...
Right. Yeah. So then at the end, I said, so in the, you know, spirit of practicing what I preach, here are three things I could have said instead. And I don't know if I'll remember them all right, but I could have said, I'm a new gardener. I could have said, I'm learning to garden.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, like, I'm obsessed with this new thing, gardening. Like, I could have taken out that negative knot.
Mm-hmm.
And approached the conversation in a whole different way. And it wouldn't have changed in that particular email. It wouldn't have changed the point that I was trying to get across. So
I think we oftentimes, it's very natural for human beings to use no as a jumping off point for who we are.
Yeah.
It's one of the first words we learn as a kid. And it's what we use as a boundary to have the divide between you and me.
You know, it's interesting that you brought up boundaries because I was also thinking that's one of the first things I said to Pip.
Mm-hmm.
How we set those boundaries with kids, with dogs, but then how bad we are at setting boundaries with ourselves as we grow up, like the boundaries that we need to stay helpful or to stay healthy.
Mm-hmm.
We quit using the word no when it comes to what we need.
Yes. I mean, if you've ever been in a conversation with someone where you're sharing different ideas, like we do on this podcast, you will often find that in the places that you differ, it's no. And that's how we define ourselves. Mm-hmm. Instead of the inverse of that is, I see you. Here is what I, here's what I believe. Instead, we say, no, this is how it is. Or no, this is what I think. So I think that flip is going to be important for when we talk about the kinds of stories that we tell ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think, well, at least for me, I view my life through the lens of storytelling because stories are very important to me. And they give me, a lot of times stories will give me the motivation to do the things or be the kind of person that I want to be.
For example,
I loved Harry Potter growing up.
Mm.
And the main takeaways that I took from those stories is that it's important to find those who are on the outside and to befriend them. That no one is too different to become part of your friend circle, and that oftentimes the people who are on the outside are the ones who are going to value friendship the most. And that gets embodied in the character of Luna Lovegood, who is quirky and different and even bullied to some extent. Her clothes are stolen. She's seen as weird. And yet she's the one who like paints her friends' faces on her ceiling and values them so highly. And I think that's that I've tried to encapsulate that into or put that into myself because I don't want anyone to feel alone. Mm-hmm. So it's important for me to reach out to the outsider. So that story has impacted my life and very much impacted the person that I've become. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's how, I mean, that's how much I value stories. And it's also how I view my own life. How am, what kind of stories am I going to write? Like figuratively, like what do I want to see in the storybook of my life? You know? So yeah.
I think I approach that narrative and more how the way we speak to ourselves or the things that we say about ourselves, which is stories that we tell, it's but like it also inner, can be a like sentence.
Sure. It's like an inner narrative, right?
Right.
It doesn't have to be a grand sweeping epic.
Right.
These stories that we tell ourselves can happen in, oh, you know, over a conversation or, you know, at a day at work. What kinds of stories, when we lay down at night, how are we processing what has happened through the day?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a story that you tell yourself.
Mm-hmm. And the, we're never just who we are in one moment. We're like a culmination of every moment we've had, right? Mm-hmm. And so those stack up to be stories. And if we're not careful, they will write themselves. And I think that they tend to write, we tend to focus on negative things. Yes. And so I don't think you have to work very hard to have negative narrative about who you are.
Oh, sure.
I think that you have to be very intentional and work hard to have positive narrative about who you are.
This idea of an object in motion will stay in motion. If we start out our lives with the no, with the I'm different than you, no, the negative, then it doesn't take much to continue that ball rolling because it's going to keep going that direction. So it requires the intentionality that you're talking about to redirect, to course correct into a more positive outlook.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention, the negative outlook on life gets modeled for us over and over again in some sort of false sense of humility or...
Oh, right.
Or like in an effort to fit in, we need to stay humble or stay at a certain level so that we don't stick out.
Yes. Also, negativity is popular. So even like... You know, you can find all kinds of memes that are geared toward the negative.
Absolutely.
I'm trying to think of an example now and like,
well, how many times at the end of every year it's, oh, 2016 was a dumpster fire. Oh, 2017 was a dumpster fire. And it just keeps going.
Right. It just keeps getting worse. Like, is there anything good?
Yeah.
Or even in the way that sometimes like in a friend group, you can really just... You just get together and even if you're not talking bad about other people like gossiping, it, you're just like piling on with
you could
negativity.
Talk about politics being, you know, awful or the state of the world. There's all sorts of negative things that you can focus on. And I want to give legitimacy to that because there are some truly awful things that are going on right now. However, I went to go see my friend just recently and we were talking about a lot of bad things that were going on. Mm-hmm. And she goes, we don't have to talk about this the whole time. What's something that inspires you right now?
Yeah. Sometimes you do need to vent. Like you have to release the pressure, right? So there is a, I think negativity, like positive and negative exist in nature, like there's, in magnets, right?
There's toxic negativity and toxic positivity. Yeah. You need them in balance. However, we're as we're narrowing down our topic, we're talking about the narratives that we tell ourselves inside of our heads. Mm-hmm. And that tends to be a fairly negative place.
Yeah.
So we're trying to help course correct that portion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is one place where I will take my least favorite phrase and say, I will allow it to exist here.
Okay.
And I think that is the idea of fake it till you make it.
Oh, Joe, I'm shocked.
So let's go back to me being a gardener.
Yeah.
I was saying I'm not a gardener. Well, but I want to have a garden. So what did I do? I'm like, I'm going to just fake it till I make it. I'm going to go through the steps of being a gardener, even though I don't feel like a gardener, until I am a gardener.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. Now, I think it also hits the idea of why I don't like the phrase fake it till you make it, because it's starting from the assumption that I'm not that thing.
Yes.
That I have to fake being that thing so that I can become it, when really just by having a shovel and like sticking it in the ground, I can be a gardener.
I think to transition this over into the kind of mindsets that we, or the positive mindset we want to put ourselves in, it's those moments where you think, oh, I don't have enough courage for this right now. But you tell yourself, no, I do have the courage for this, even though you may not feel like it. And that very act of telling yourself you are courageous enough to try something new, to, you know, talk to that person, it is in that moment that then you do gain courage. So that sort of fake it till you make it is both like true and false at the same time. It's kind of like a paradox.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, I'm not courageous enough. No, I'm going to tell myself that I am. And by saying that, you do become that.
Right. I think what we're doing is getting rid of the arbitrary benchmarks that we put on things. So I might follow people who have gardening YouTube channels, or they have all this knowledge, and I think that's a gardener. Or I even have friends who have been gardening for several seasons and they like love it, and I think, okay, they're gardeners. So I have set this arbitrary, I've built this arbitrary avatar of what it looks like to be a gardener. And so because I don't fit that avatar, I don't think that I can call myself that. And so, well, rats, now I forgot what you had said, how I was going to tie it back in. But I think that we set these arbitrary benchmarks and then we aren't that. And that's what we feel like we have to fake until we make it. But we could just alleviate that, get rid of
the gatekeeping.
Yes. And that arbitrary line that we've created. No one else is saying this is what it takes to be a gardener.
We often base the stories that we tell ourselves on the stories that we see other people model.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we like gatekeep ourselves and talk about, well, I don't look like that. So therefore I can't use that in my story. I'm not a gardener. Therefore, you know, my story doesn't look like their story. So I can't be a gardener.
Yeah.
So that comparison comes in.
Absolutely.
And let's be real. There's no how-to book on how to be you. So there's really not a wrong way to write your story.
Right. I mean, Dr. Seuss probably tried to write something close about being you, right?
Sure.
What did he say? Something, there's nothing that's truer than true. No one else is youer than you. Yeah. I don't remember.
Yeah. I mean, that same sentiment carries over here. Your story is not going to be like anyone else's. It may come really close. You may find someone in history or in your family that has shared similar paths, but no one's exactly the same as you. So the way you choose to write your story is not going to match up with anybody else's. So you can't really define yourself by anybody else.
Right. In the same way that we can kind of, we look at other people and are influenced by their story and we think ours needs to line up in some way, I think the way that we talk about ourselves can have influence on other people. So if we can model, because you were talking about like other people modeling a certain story, if we can model kind of the affirmation and like speaking positivity, then that influences the way that other people will talk about themselves too and think about themselves. I think it gives people permission to reframe a lot of how they see themselves.
Absolutely. And I think nothing embodies that more than when we tell people when you've made something, you cannot then, and someone compliments you on it, you cannot then point out all of the different things that are wrong with it. You just have to accept the compliment. Mm-hmm. Because not only does that allow you to accept the positive reinforcement, but it also gives that person permission to take compliments in the future.
Yes. We were, so I visited my bestie over the weekend and we watched Mean Girls with her little girl, well, her preteen.
Yeah.
And I hadn't seen it like since I was, I mean, since it came out probably. Yeah. So it had been a long time. I had forgotten a lot of it. But there's a scene in there where the mean girls, like the popular kind of clique, is all standing looking at themselves in the mirror saying negative things about their bodies and like really silly things too about like the how their eyes are set or their ears or their whatever. But they're just staring at the mirror, tearing their physical appearance to pieces, and they're all doing it and they're all just piling on. And then the main character who has grown up in Africa and doesn't have a lot of the same cultural expectations that we do is just standing there and they just look at her like waiting for her to join in and say something negative. And so that's the inverse of this, right? Like the way we talk about ourselves influences other people. So if I'm always talking poorly about my body or about like cheating with food or then that's going to carry over to how other people are thinking too.
This is true. I love that that moment also encapsulates what we talked about before, that we often are negative in order to fit in, in order to be part of the group. And I'm glad you touched on food because as I was hanging out with my bestie this weekend, my favorite thing to do is to go and eat a ton of food at various places and try new things. So that's basically all we did. And there were moments where she would say something like, oh, I probably shouldn't be eating this. Yeah. Or we went to a bakery and she goes, oh, this is a carbo load. And I said, you know, I've really been trying to talk more positively about the food that I'm eating. Mm-hmm. We're having a good time. I don't eat like this all the time. I'm here to enjoy that. I'm going to tell myself that this is part of the enjoyment. This is what I like to do. I'm going to enjoy this and not shame myself while I do it.
Right. Because you're also choosing it.
Yes.
And that's different than when things become a vice and we like are making decisions.
Oh, yes.
Like on auto, like it almost feels like we're out of control and it's not a choice that we're making.
Oh, I told someone recently, lately I've been eating ice cream like it's my job, not because it tastes good.
Right.
And like that's when it becomes like, okay, I really need to check in with myself and figure out what's going on that's making me fill this void with ice cream rather than whatever it needs to be filled with. And that's the difference. So, but if we're constantly hearing other people talk about, oh, I shouldn't be eating this. I'm so bad. I shouldn't be, because we want to be, you know, we want to fit in. That's not healthy. Mm-mm. That's robbing yourself of joy. Mm-hmm. Or if you look at yourself in the mirror, because I struggle with this too, of looking in the mirror and not really liking what I see. My life is too short to be hating on the body that allows me to do so many things. And research has proven that if you are unhappy and shaming yourself, it is harder for you to get to the body that you feel comfortable in. So shaming yourself only hurts you.
And this is another, I don't want to camp out here too long,
sure,
but this is another perfect example of arbitrary benchmarks that we set. And when, and we are listening to the things that other people say. So if I hear you talk about how you don't like your body, and then my body is bigger than yours, shorter than yours, whatever, like if you are what I aspire to be.
Yes.
But I hear you talking about how you're not good enough or whatever, then that's going to make me feel even worse about myself. Like it just is this horrible cycle.
Absolutely. So, and I think this translates over into our creativity because if you're already hard on yourself, like I'm not crafty or I'm not a quilter, how much less likely are you able to then try and step into those things? Mm-hmm. You almost have to come in with either a positive or at the bare minimum, a neutral mindset of this might work out.
Mm-hmm.
You can't come into it thinking, oh, I'm just going to hate this because you probably will.
Yeah.
It's kind of the self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. That's funny. I had self-fulfilling prophecy written down too. Because when whatever it is that you're looking at, that is where you're going to go.
Man, I never figured out that that was really how like things worked until very recently. Like, I've never been very coordinated with my body, oh. But like in throwing, you know, throwing the ball for my dog, I'm like, yes, I really have to look at where I'm throwing the ball because yeah. It really does determine where it goes. Yeah. I don't know why it took me this long to get here, well, but here we are.
Did you throw a ball as a child? Like, did you play sports?
I did PE and I'd play Frisbee with my parents.
Yeah, but you didn't play, like, where you weren't coached.
I did play softball for about a year, okay. And I was still terrible.
But your coach never told you to look at where you're throwing?
Probably, but it probably never, like, look, I may have been, like I'm telling you, I may have been told those things, but it took me a while to internalize that.
Do you think you would have liked playing softball better if you could have worn a uniform, like, in a league of their own?
Maybe.
I think so. Yeah, I think that feels more like your style.
Yeah. I will admit, a lot of the allure of softball was, like, being there with friends and getting to eat sunflower seeds out in the... in the field.
Oh, yeah. You know, you can eat sunflower seeds without playing softball.
Indeed. But there's just something about like the dirt and like waiting for a ball to get hit and then like spitting out a shell that just feels very, I don't know.
So I played catcher and so I had the mask on, right?
Yeah.
And so I couldn't spit the seeds out. So I would like eat them, like keep the whole ones on one cheek side. And then the shells in the other and then spit them all out at once. Also, we had in our dugout like a big thing of bubblegum.
Oh yeah.
And fireballs.
Sorry, I'm real excited about.
And then like a big thing of fireballs. A big bucket of fireballs. So self-fulfilling prophecy. Where you're looking
is where it's
where you're going to go. And so if you're putting the negative out there, I can't make friends. It's too hard to make friends as an adult.
I'm unlovable.
I can't make friends. Then you're not going to make friends. Also, you're not going to be very, like, no one's going to be your friend, want to be your friend, because you're being a negative, I was going to say negative Nancy, but I know Nancy's listening and I don't want to say.
Negative Nelly,
yes,
maybe?
A negative Nelly.
Well,
a negative ninny.
I think that makes a lot of sense. No one is going to want to be around someone who is negative. Or if you're telling yourself those things, like let's say you think, oh, well, I'm a bad parent. And then every time you mess up, it just confirms.
Right.
You're like, well, yep, look, there's another reason why I'm a bad parent. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's another reason why I'm not good enough.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, I'm a parent who's doing the best that I can.
Right.
And then further confirming that with the good things, because you can do both.
Yeah.
There are people who are looking at your life right now, probably a little envious of where you are. They'd never tell you, but there's probably people who are idealizing things based on the positive things that are going on.
Also, a decision, like bad, doing something that was kind of a bad parenting decision is not the same thing as being a bad parent.
Yeah.
Like the things we do accumulate to be who we are, but one thing, like eating a chocolate chip cookie does not turn you into a chocolate chip cookie. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
But yet we're told you are what you eat.
Mm-hmm.
But not necessarily. You know, I love now the trend in parenting of doing affirmations with your kids and like seeing in the mirror when people will post it, you know, of all of the things that they are calling out and affirming in their child.
Yeah.
I just think how wonderful to, because Jess will do that with Molly and, you know, that she'll say like, you are brave and you are strong and you are kind. Mm-hmm. And I always say you are creative. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you're funny. You're whatever. You're a good friend. Like, I think it's cool that people are saying that out loud to their kids.
The world is hard enough. So for all of those out there that are like, oh, these kids are going to have such a, you know, they're going to get out in the real world and have a rude awakening. Oh, that will happen. But I love that parents are out there trying to build their kids up before they get exposed
and
to that.
Build them, like, make them resilient almost, like give them the tools and the words that they need to know who they are. And that is in contrast to kind of my generation, the millennials, everyone getting a trophy.
Yeah, it's different.
I think they're trying to accomplish the same thing. Like, you are worthwhile and you are valuable, and the effort that you put into this softball season mattered. Yeah. But that's not worth a trophy. That's just part of being a good human. Mm-hmm. And that's where that kind of focusing on the thing, like on the trophy, didn't solve the problem. And we needed to focus on the process that gets you to what you think the trophy means.
Mm-hmm. The story that we tell ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I think sometimes this is what leads to identity crisis when people hit middle age.
Okay.
So you've done all of these, you have all of these things that defined who you are. So whether it's, you know, I play in a competitive adult softball league, or I'm a backpacker, or I'm a quilter, or a lot of those things have to do with your kids.
Or your job.
Your job, your relationship.
Yeah.
And then if any of those things fall apart, or if you're not able, as your body changes, as you get old, to do the same things that you were doing before, or you enter a different season of life or whatever, and some of those things that you have hung your identity on go away,
mm-hmm.
then you don't know who you are anymore, because you for so long said that you were that. Like, I wonder what would happen if Make Do ceased,
mm-hmm.
you know, because so much of who I am is externalized through Make Do.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, though, I just answered my own question that Make Do is an extension of me. So if Make Do the thing quit existing, all of that would still be part of who I am. I would just have to find another place to put it,
mm-hmm.
to express it.
Indeed.
But being able to call it out as my job, and it also is my identity, it's a weird, like, tangle.
So I've actually been going through quite a transition lately, because a lot of things that I wanted to define myself as at this point in my life, I haven't reached. Mm. Like, I think I'm still, even though I love my job here, I'm still a little bit grieving the loss of being a classroom teacher. Uh-huh. That was something that I wanted to be ever since I was 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be hard to let go of. It was a defining feature of my character for a long time. I would have liked to have had kids by now. I'm not a mom. That was who I was going to be. People all the time tell me, oh, you would be such a good mom, or you would be this or that. And hearing that can be kind of painful, because I'm not at that point in my life. There were, you know, I wanted to be in Texas.
Yeah.
I'm no longer a Texan. I live in Arkansas. So there's a lot of things, or like even now I've moved out of a religious tribe that I've been a part of for years and years. And so the story of who I am has changed so drastically. And I've cried over it a lot, because like, who am I? Who is the person that I'm telling myself I am? What do I share with people?
Mm-hmm.
It's just really tough when you lose a lot of those things that you tied to yourself. But I'm still kind. I'm still smart. I still love being creative. Those things have not changed, even though what I thought my life was going to look like doesn't look anything like I thought it would.
You know what? Back to the idea of identity crisis. I think it happens so much sooner for women.
Mm.
And then we don't go crazy and like go buy a Ferrari and when we're 45. Or like, I think by the time women are 45, we're finding who we are. Like, I love getting older,
mm-hmm.
because I was feeling the same way that you are saying now, like when I was your age. I always was.
For reference, I'm about to turn 29.
Yeah. So when I was 28, that's when I had just moved to Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And I had spent, I mean, my path was not typical,
yeah.
at all. So I didn't have any of those cultural benchmarks that were affirming who I was as a woman.
Yeah.
Like, I was not married.
Yeah.
In the same like faith circle that
yes.
you are in, like that was atypical. So there was so many things that made me feel really jumbled.
Mm-hmm. Because some people don't know how to deal with you.
Right.
Because you are not falling in line with a typical story.
Right. And what I have found is the older that I get, either people are like, oh, well, she's a lost cause. We're just going to quit asking her these questions. Or they're like, well, she's a grown up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't, you know, no one now, it's been a long time since someone has asked me why I'm not married.
Yeah.
And yet, when I was between the ages of 25 and 35, it was constant. Now, also, it could be I've taken myself out of circumstances where that question would be asked of me.
Yes.
But that's pretty freeing, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess I know it's not always encouraging for people to be like, don't worry, it gets better. But I do think that that is one of the joys of aging as a woman, is like we just start to become more and more comfortable with who we are.
Yeah. I think there's a dark secret here that even though you may be hitting all of these benchmarks, maybe your story looks like a lot of other people around you, you still feel different because you live it and you are living something that maybe your situation doesn't feel true to the stories that you see around mm-hmm. you. So you may on the outside look like you have the life that everyone else would want, but you know deep down that there's all of these other things going on. And so I want to let you know that you are seen.
Yeah.
And that we know that even when your life looks like, quote, it should,
yeah,
that no one's life goes the way that they want it to.
No. And that's the harm of fake it till you make it, or of pretending. Like you think, well, everyone told me these things would make me happy.
Yes.
Or even, no one even has to say it out loud. No one has Mm-mm. to tell you out loud. But when you see cultural norms, mm-hmm. are there for a reason. And so, because that's how our culture normally walks through life.
Yeah.
So then you just assume that happiness is at the end of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's not true.
No. That's why you got to find your own. I think it's important when we're talking about the stories that we tell ourselves, whether we're in creative endeavors or relationships or whatever it may be, that you need to know yourself and you need to know what you like. You need to know what makes you happy. And that is a journey. So as you're going through these, you know, these events in your life, I think it's important to keep searching for the things that, you know, give you life, because then you'll be able to better write a story that truly is fulfilling to you. Mm-hmm. Not just happy, but giving you value.
And what's really tricky is if you're a type of person that those things are constantly changing.
Mm-hmm.
I am. Like, I'm always obsessed with something new, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, it's actually like learning a new project or skill or having something like fun to obsess over that makes me feel fulfilled. So right now it's gardening. In July, it's not going to be. Mm-hmm. It'll be something different.
So now you're able to go into your life knowing that you won't be known for just one thing, mm-hmm. or the stories that they tell are like, it's not going to be, oh, she was this master, whatever. It's not going to be one thing. It's going to be talking about all of these different things mm-hmm. that you do, and you won't be disappointed by that mm-hmm. because you know it's what makes you happy. And that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did think of you last night because yesterday I got a massage. And you're always talking about self-care. And so I got a massage and then I took a bath, which I hated. But I did think, this is self-care. Madison would be so proud of me.
Yes, absolutely.
But at the end of it, I was like, I still hate baths.
That's okay.
I'm not a bath person.
Sometimes the self-care doesn't look like I need an ice cream cone at the end of the day. Sometimes it looks like drinking a green smoothie and taking a bath that you don't want to take. But it's what you need to do in order to keep doing the things you love, like gardening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was an Epsom salt. Also, Pip, just because, you know, baths are new for us. So she just like tried to lick the water and me the whole time.
Lovely.
And then she laid her head on the edge of the bathtub and just
watched
looked
you.
At me. While I was just sitting there like twiddling my thumbs until my 20 minutes was up.
Gotta love pets and just hanging out in the bathroom with you.
Yes. that's all of my randomness I had down. I do have some tips.
All right, let's jump into those tips.
Do you have any? You
don't I have do any, have some.
I mean, do you have any more randomness?
No.
Okay. So these were tips specifically for flipping the perspective, maybe, instead of focusing on what you aren't, instead of leading with that, I'm not a gardener, focusing on what you are. So that is kind of how I centered my tips. And the first one is really easy. It's just, well, not easy, simple. Lead with the affirmative.
Yeah.
Don't tell me what you're not. Tell me what you are.
I love that. Simple and clean.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. I said, be more aware of that inner dialogue. So that running, I know this is controversial, or at least it was like 6 months ago, where it's like, do you have a voice in your head or do you not have a voice in your head that keeps like a running tab of your thoughts? Whatever way that you are communicating with yourself in your inner mind, be aware of what it's saying, because I think a lot of people don't know, or they don't realize that they're like, when they come away from a situation where they're like, oh, I was so awkward. I can't do that again. Be aware when those moments happen and then turn it around and say, you know, I was really tired and I think I just wasn't bringing my A game. I'll just try next time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's positive ways that you can take that dialogue. And I'm not saying like sugarcoating things or pretending that something didn't happen.
Or lying to yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm talking about looking at the facts and being like, here's a more, I don't want to necessarily say objective view, because we're talking about stories. It's the lenses through which we're viewing the facts that happened, but a kinder version of those facts.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that for yourself.
Also, along with that, if you're with someone else, I think you can ask them, hey, was I awkward?
That was one of my other tips, was sharing your story with others and allowing for feedback. Mm-hmm. So this can be in your creative work where you're like, I think this is really bad. And you show it to someone else and they're like, no, this is great and wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
You can take that in. There is the caveat of you need to be careful about who you're sharing things with and who you trust to give you feedback. You don't want a hype man, and you also don't want someone who's also super negative.
Right.
So be aware of who you're sharing with, but share your story with other people, and you might be shocked to find the similarities between your story and someone else's, or you might be shocked to find that they're there to encourage you.
Well, and sometimes that can be someone who was with you when the experience happened, because I've had times later where I'll say to someone, I don't think that that was a great, you know, I don't think I represented Make Do very well today. And then someone on my board who was there will be like, it was fine. You know, but in my head, I like knew what I wanted to say and I didn't say it all, but you know, it's just easy for me to see the places I fell short, and I really need the outside perspective, to help me with that.
Absolutely. What's another one of your tips?
Okay. So another one of my tips is to have pragmatic positivity.
Okay. What does that mean?
So we talk about, you mentioned earlier, like toxic positivity, and that can be the pendulum swing away from, you know, focusing always on the negative, but it's not real. And because of that, it holds no value, and you're not going to get anything out of it. Like, kind of the sugary sweet, everything's always fantastic.
Or constantly trying to find things that are good in some bad situations. You need to be realistic and be like, nope, this is pretty bad.
Right. I think also if you've grown up in Christian culture, there is, you know, we take the verse about everything will work out for good out of context. And then we say things like, well, God wouldn't have let this happen if something better wasn't going to, you know, or instead of letting yourself sit with things that suck.
Well, yeah. So when I went to Nashville, I was with a small group of young professionals at lunch, and I was talking to them about my job, and they're like, the story how I came to Make Do, and they're like, wow, God just opened up a door for you. And I could see how people would say that.
No, I opened it. I opened the door when you knocked on it.
You mean Joe opened the door? Well, and y'all are going to get a little insight into my own religious views here. I think to put that on God would then to say that he then, you know, he opened this door because he closed the other door of teaching. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to put that on God. Mm-hmm. Those decisions and those things are not solely God's doing. And the way that I view it is that he walks with me through whatever door or window happens to be open. Yeah.
I talk about it. I probably haven't shared this on the podcast, and I don't know if I've shared it with you, but I talk about all the time when I'm speaking to groups of young people, but I think of it as, you know, those hamster balls,
mm-hmm, the little clear ones.
Yeah.
You put your hamster
and
in.
You put a hamster in it and then the hamster can run all over.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I think of God's, like existence with us, or God's will for us. Like, we are just inside of this big God ball,
mm-hmm,
and we have free range throughout the house. Sometimes we will like get ourselves stuck into a corner, you know, in, yep, our little God ball.
Yep.
Sometimes we might accidentally go down the stairs.
Yeah.
And we feel tousled, but we have freedom of choice.
Yes.
And of all kinds of things. And so to me, it's because I think people are trying to be like encouraging or whatever.
And they also want to give positive, like they're like, oh, well, I want to attribute this to God because he's done so many great things. However, the problem is that when you flip it, when someone's,
yeah,
life has been nothing,
yeah,
but negative, that same sort of sentiment does not work.
No.
And I want to pay honor to those people who have had those experiences, because those people are in my life. I'm friends. I'm family with those people. Mm-hmm. And I believe God loves them just as much, mm-hmm, as me. So to say, well, he's given me so much good and given someone so little, it rocks me.
Also, America is quite an individualistic culture,
mm-hmm,
and we project that onto God and providence. And so, does God really care what your job is? Like, what
if I'm teaching, or
right,
if I'm here,
like
at
how
do,
you're making your paycheck?
I don't yeah, think so. I think what God cares about, at least for me, the story that I tell myself is that he cares about how I treat other people, how I engage with other people. And I can do that whether I'm in a classroom or whether I'm here.
Yeah.
It doesn't negate the fact that I still grieve for some lost, mm-hmm, story, but it does give me hope and a little bit of peace that he is with me through whatever door I may walk through.
Well, there's so much freedom in that too, because then you don't have to be so wrapped up in making the wrong decision,
mm-hmm,
in like being in the wrong story.
Yes.
Because you're just in your God ball.
Yeah.
Running around the house.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you get tousled, but sometimes it's really fun.
Yes, indeed.
So pragmatic positivity would be to acknowledge the good when it's there.
Yeah.
To know that even horrible situations can come with laughter.
Mm-hmm.
Also laugh.
Yes.
And then when times are good, let them be good.
Yes, exactly. Because otherwise, if you are always worrying about when the next bad is going to happen, you are robbing yourself, mm-hmm, of the joy of the good.
Mm-hmm.
So eat the croissant, enjoy the thing, and, you know, don't take that time to just like, well, this is going to be bad later on. Mm-mm. You're robbing yourself of joy.
Yeah.
Stop that.
Yeah.
Okay. My next tip is rewrite the story using available facts, which I think is pretty much the same thing that you've said here about pragmatic positivity. Try to take a look at the situation, take inventory of it, and try to find the positive, or at least try to not just see the negative. Because I think when we're always looking for the negative, we will even make up some negative,
yeah,
that has happened.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, I did that so poorly. Look at this. Oh, it's so bad. And you just get really down on yourself. Is that really true?
Yeah.
How much bad is there? And just be honest about
it. Right.
What's your next?
Oh. Pip is real comfortable on her bed. Okay, this is my last one.
Okay.
Prioritize the process, not the outcome.
Mm.
So you know, I'm like doing something outside of my yard every day. Who knows what it'll look like, because it takes time. And I think the way that then others become part of that is that we're looking to others for inspiration, not identity. So I am like texting or DMing my gardener friends for information, for like pictures of what they've done. I want to like hear their knowledge and their experience, but I'm not letting them and their experience set that arbitrary benchmark for me.
That you need to be doing all the things that they are doing,
yeah,
in order to be part of the group.
Yeah. So when someone comes to Make Do and takes a quilting class, we are, by going through the process, they will be a quilter, yeah, as they're doing it. Now, do they want to keep being a quilter? Maybe. But maybe not, but that doesn't matter. Like when you're in the moment and in the process, you are doing the thing. And so you can be inspired by other quilters that you see. You can say, one day I want to be able to make a quilt like this, but you're not using that person's advanced experience be the finish line for what it takes to be able to call yourself a quilter.
I like that because it allows you to write your story moment by moment. Mm-hmm. If you are an avid reader or movie watcher or engage in the theater, you'll know that the most interesting characters aren't always having fun things happen to them all the time. That makes for a really boring story. Mm-hmm. What makes a story valuable is the culmination of the good and bad. And that is what you're writing. So if you have a moment where it's like, oh, I really didn't achieve what I wanted to there, you can use that as a springboard to try and get to another moment where you get to try again. And it's the culmination of all of those moments, the process of writing your story, that gives it value and meaning, not the product of every single day of writing that story, you know, like, oh, that was a bad day. Oh, that was a good day. Oh, that was a so-so mm-hmm. day. It's the product of all of those days together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So my last tip is to find stories that speak to you. This might just be a tip that feels good for myself, but when I think about the stories that I really enjoy and the characters that I enjoy, it gives me insight into who I am and what I want out of my story. So some of my favorite stories from childhood up into adulthood include, like, you know, Disney princess stories. It includes Spider-Man, Harry Potter, or all of these other stories about people who come into a space that is maybe not good or maybe even doesn't like them, but they bring good into it. Spider-Man's your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. He's there to do good. Harry Potter comes in and uses his wealth and uses his knowledge to like bring people together into this friend group. Snow White comes out of a bad situation and she comes into a space and makes it better just by her presence. And that's the kind of person that I want to be. So finding those stories, not just even in fiction, you can find people that you may want to emulate and try to bring that into your own story if you're looking for a place to start, because there's a lot of people that don't know themselves well enough. So you kind of have to borrow from others, fake it till you make it, if you will. So think about stories that you like, what you like about them, and how you want to emulate that in your own life,
mm-hmm.
with your own little twist on it, of mm-hmm. course.
Right, because you are a whole person, and stories are oftentimes two-dimensional. Like, yes, they have a particular point, a particular thing that they're trying to make. Right, it's like rom-coms. So we have a rom-com club where we watch a rom-com and eat soup, as one does.
Yes.
And that's one of the things that can make a rom-com fall flat, because you're like, well, that was a nice 90 minutes, but what about in 2 weeks? How is this relationship yes. going to be? And so, you know, you kind of have to hold that tension when you are looking at whether it is a fictional character or the stories other people are letting you see yeah. about them, because no one's telling you the whole story.
No, absolutely. All right. That's it for me.
Y'all same.
All right. So tell me about something that you are, tell me your sweet or sour, whatever you
okay,
want to start.
I was thinking, what are they going to be? I don't know yet. Do you have one written down?
I do.
Okay.
my sweet is that I feel the most prepared for summer classes than I ever have before. And I think it just comes with, once again, just doing it over and over again.
Experience.
Yep.
For sure.
Feels good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My sweet is, I had a really good time with my friend.
Oh, yeah.
She loved the t-shirt quilt that I made.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
It was like a memory quilt, right?
It was a t-shirt. It was her grandma's clothes.
Yeah.
But man, let me tell you, this might be too TMI. Flying gives me such bad gas.
Oh,
like it kind of stays in my body.
Mm.
I told my sister, I said, it feels like my butt needs to burp. And she was like, that's called a fart. And I said, no, it just feels different. I don't know how to describe it. So I'll stop trying to, but like, yes. So I looked it up to see if it's a thing. And it is. Oh. It can be the change in the cabin pressure can make the gases in your body expand.
Oh.
And so that's why you can feel, but it was so uncomfortable.
No. I'm sorry.
I guess I can let that be my sour.
It's
like a lame sour.
No, that's fair. Like,
I'm sure I could think of a better one if I tried.
That's funny. Yeah. Airplane gas. Who knew?
Yeah. So it is a thing.
Yeah.
They say not to drink like carbonated beverages or there's a few things that they listed that could help. But I already have shy bowels when I travel.
Yes.
Like, they like my home potty.
Yes.
So, you know,
I think
that
a lot
could
of people
be part
are
of it
like
too.
That. Yeah, I get that. My sour is that I'm on some new medication, but it makes me so sleepy. I am sleeping way more than I would like to be, but my body's just so tired. I'm hoping that my body adjusts after about 3 weeks, but if this persists, I'm gonna have to call up my doctor and be like, look, I am sleeping all the time. I can't do this.
I you know, after my shoulder surgery, I feel like even since then it has been, I could sleep mostly anytime, except at night when I'm supposed to.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like I'm waking up at 3 a.m. and like, all right, it's time to get up. And I'm like, no, go back to bed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's my sour. What are you learning?
That's a big sour. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well.
What am I learning? I'm still learning about my garden.
Yeah.
I also just started like an online course about branding your nonprofit.
Hey.
So Make Jews Branding, we've been talking about this for a while, I'm sure. It needs a glow up.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like excited to have someone, you know, walk me through that. Because I think we can do it. I can DIY the glow up, but it will be nice to have somebody kind of hold my hand while I do it.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
That's what I'm learning.
I'm learning that I just need to be listening to my body. So yes, I am tired. So I'm trying to sleep when I can, when it's appropriate kind of thing. As frustrating as it is. Because trying to ignore and be like, oh, I'm just going to power through this is not going to help my body.
No. And that's another message that our culture will tell us over and over. You know, kind of that cliche of you can sleep when you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
And that we just, you know, hustle culture. And
no, I'm not going to power through. I'll feel even worse if I try and do that.
Mm-hmm.
So sleep when I can, do work when I can, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
rhythm, baby.
It's important. All right. So if you miss us, you're welcome to re-listen to some of your favorites.
Yeah. You'll probably forget what we said. Just go back.
Go back and like, you know, put us on. I've done that with a few different podcasts where I'm like, oh, I can't remember what was said in that one. Let me put that one back on.
Yeah. I mean, we've been doing this for we started in 2020.
Oh, yeah.
In August or so. And we've taken one break, but
yeah. Here we go
on
another break. So take breaks when you need to. We're going to do it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So. Try to stay cool this summer, y'all. At the dentist today. Sorry, this is just a tangent. Y'all don't mind because this is our last one, right? I went to the dentist today and the hygienist was like, oh, I'm so excited for summer. Aren't you so excited? And I was like, no. You know what? I am hoping, though, that having a garden will help me give me something to like about summer because like with the heat and the longer days come the flowers and the time, you know?
Yes.
So I'm hoping that it will give me, it will help reframe summer for me. Yes. It will give me an affirmative way, a pragmatic positivity way to think about summer.
Yeah.
Because I'm still not going to like the heat and the humidity and feeling like my face is melting off.
Those things have not changed about you.
No.
You're just adding in another element that maybe will help you enjoy summer.
Yes. Yes. So with that, and this, we have our new intro, our new outro.
Yay.
So enjoy, and we'll see you when we see you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You can find us at Make Do Create on Instagram, Make Do Cersei on Facebook, or you can just head to our website at makedocreate.org.
That's the best place to sign up for our email list, too, if you want to hear more stories and that sort of thing.
So go now.
Go, go. If you like our theme music, that is from my dear, dear friend, Craig Hudson, and you can listen to him on Spotify. That's Craig Hudson with a T. I listen to his playlist all the time.